Welcome to Threshold Stories, crossing thresholds one story at a time. I'm your host, Jeff Gora.
So podcast 108, the more informal of informal sessions about the Blue Ridge Parkway. Specifically, this is a nostalgic look kind of at our time on the Blue Ridge Parkway. So how many times now have you and I messed around on this road?
In terms of full length to length rides, twice, but probably over the past 5-6 years, we've been up there about a dozen times.
I know. I think you've ridden on that thing since you've been an early teenager.
Yeah, since I was a kid, even.
Yeah, so climbing on that thing. So let's take a stare through at 2021, because I think there's some cool stories here. Because a lot of these images are on the website, but there's no story to go with it. So that first 10 miles, right? You're dropped off on this trip. It was you and Sarah on the first 10 miles, right? What was in your mind?
The first thing that came to my mind was the first time we did the trip. And those first few sections, it seems easy at first. And then you start getting to your hills and you're thinking, what in the world am I doing trying to ride this whole thing? Uh-huh. And I had that in mind that that was going to be my feeling the second time. And it happened right again. Just the idea of, even though I know I have done it and I can do it, that first bit is mentally the most challenging of the whole trip almost.
So you're doing this whole thing on a triathlon bike, right?
Yeah.
And quantity of people who've done it that I saw on all the years riding it, counting you, the total is one who've done it. Talk through why you're on a triathlon bike. What's that all about?
I've got a road bike, but it is in Arizona because that's where I go to college. And I've had bad luck with bike transport. So I just leave that in Arizona over the summers, and I've got a tri bike that I keep out here. So just by the nature of logistics, that's what I'm forced to. And it doesn't make a huge difference except for the hilliest of hilly climbs. Overall, I can get away with it.
Mm-hmm. So when I think of the first day, right? There's all kinds of things that happen on day one because it's long. You got the highest climb of the whole trip on day one, which kind of stinks. But this is the view at the end of day one. I think this picture kind of sums it all up.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the last trip, because it felt nice to be in the sun because the last hour of that day was coming in through the rain.
Mm-hmm, that's
so
right.
I think just warming up toes, warming up legs, and getting into dry clothes with a great view at the end of the day is perfect. That the end of the day experience at Peaks of Otter is fantastic.
Yeah, there are no otters that I've ever seen, but
don't think so.
The peak of the day is literally when you get off of your bicycle, because that's a pretty, considering that's day one, that's a pretty darn hard day one, I think. And all, of course, all the smorgasbords and meals that go with it. So day two, right? We hop on the parkway, the body's still feeling it, right? From day one. What goes through your mind on day two?
The thing that comes to me on day two is, oh no. It's the idea of, you know, you can do the climbs because you just did them yesterday. And you know that day two is a little bit easier than the previous day, but not really. Mm. And that first 20 to 30 minutes to wake your legs back up when they really don't want to be out there is tough, but once you're getting into the heart of that day, it's pretty enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. I remember pausing and filming Paul, because I was riding Sag here on this specific day, and I don't think it was day two. I think I was pedaling day two.
That's day three.
Day three. But I just remember him cutting across this section of the parkway with literally no one else. There's no cars, no cyclists. You know, he's just putzing along, going across the parkway. He's got this killer view to his right. And literally 1 minute later, he's back in the trees. It's like you're switching from China to Alaska to Central America over the course of 10 minutes, at least as far as views go.
Mm-hmm.
So day three has always been for you the high point. Why has day three for you been the cycling high point?
The first day, or the first time we did the trip, day three was my highlight because my little Garmin watch gave me my confetti and said, congratulations on your new longest ride. And that's what I enjoyed. And day three, I enjoyed it so much because we had a very unique challenge. We knew there was significant rain coming, so we were starting earlier in the day to try and avoid that. So we were beginning with flashlights necessary, and the sun had not been above the horizon yet. And that last hour and a half of day three, it's the skies were absolutely threatening. And you're trying to get up and over the final climb so you're not descending on roads in the rain. So it's the satisfaction of, ah, I beat it. I saw an obstacle, I prepared for it, and overcame it.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. I remember on day three stopping and going to the bathroom and saying, this is such a unique, it was a perfect spot to go to the bathroom, but it was a cemetery. It was just because there's some spots on the Blue Ridge Parkway that were, you know, private property, church property before the government's eminent domain took the property, right? The whole parkway is federal land. But sometimes you're only double-digit feet from somebody's property. And I'm just passing by a cemetery like this that literally went right to the edge of the road. I thought was so unique. When you hit the state line, I always like grabbing a photo as you transition from Virginia to North Carolina. Do you remember Sarah's shirt she was wearing that day? I think this is classic. It's Sloth Cycling Team. We'll get there when we get there.
It was perfect for that. Was the our long day too.
Mm-hmm. For her, it was a long day. She's done multiple Ironman, and she's an Ironman coach, and she coaches more athletes than I do. So for her, there was never a sense of physical intimidation. But you guys were all in arrow that day, riding down the roads.
You can get away with it because there's a good flat-ish section for the middle half of that ride. So that's one of the days where there's two sections really of the parkway that I think are fantastic to be in an aero bike, because we've got such an advantage and we've got a nice 5-mile-ish rolling downhill. And that's one of those times. It was just after that picture, I think.
So what's your answer to people who say, well, I can't stay up with the group?
There really isn't a group.
That's right.
The hills separate people so much because there's no effect of riding in a pack. Mm-hmm. In terms of your aerodynamics. So it's all about what you can hold. And if you're forcing yourself to ride with somebody you can't ride with all day, that's a bad decision for everyone involved.
That's right.
You've got to be smart about what you can do for 5 hours, 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you can get through. And as a result, that often means you're not with a group. So
if for me as the SAG driver on that day, because we took turns driving SAG, it was a non-event because I can just look at the phone and see who's where and how fast they're moving. So if I need to check in with Sarah, I can see she's 3.4 miles behind everybody or 3.4 miles in front. And it's also real easy because after you start getting familiar with riders and rider types, you know who's going to be going slow, and they just leave an hour before everybody else or 30 minutes because ideally you want to either finish together or eat lunch together, with eating lunch together probably being the more important of the two, right? And we never struggled with connecting for food in the middle of the day at different times. Conversation on the trail. What do you remember about conversations you had while you were pedaling?
Some of the conversations involved some, a lot of course, because we're riders, everybody's bragging about, oh, I've done this climb, or especially in this group, I've done this Ironman or this marathon. That was pretty common, but a lot of it was comparing it not necessarily to epic rides, but just to this reminds me of this part of my ride that I do at home when I'm training.
Oh, right. And yep. Mm-hmm.
I do this all the time, but this is way cooler. And it's kind of contrasting it to your daily routine. And it really helps you get a sense of the parkway and just how epic of an adventure it is compared to your typical ride training.
You know, because this route is, it's completely engineered end to end. It's not a piecemeal put together like so many of the other road systems, especially in Europe, where you have, you know, an epic ride with a disaster in the middle, where you're at 18% up or down, which really limits the number of people who can enjoy that. I mean, you can do it, but do you enjoy going up in 18%? No, but we got 8% as pretty much our worst grade that lasts for more than 50 feet, which makes, that's why I think almost anybody can do the ride. It's amazing that we had all that product from Power Bar, because when they first gave it to us and I told them what we were going to do with it when they agreed to sponsor us, I thought there's no way we're going to eat that much. And, you know, next thing you know, we're down 2 boxes of these and 2 boxes of those. And I'm thinking, wow, we really are consuming all of this stuff.
There's still plenty more to go. That's the craziest
part. I know. How about the weather? What did you think of the variety in the weather? Look at this picture right here that we got of Lenny took of...
Where is that?
I don't know exactly where it is.
I think that was the day riding into Blowing Rock because we had the cloudiness.
That's right. Yeah, the visibility stunk.
I thought it was good because this trip, we didn't have any real heat moments, in my opinion. It was more on the colder side of a trip.
Yeah.
We had a couple of rain days and one super cold morning out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody we talked to after the trip, including me, I was riding that day, is long gloves were, everybody wished they had them or they went to Walmart and bought them
right
before.
Mm-hmm.
So it was generally pretty good. Weather was either we knew it was coming and planned for it, or we got lucky and it happened only towards the end parts of the day.
Mm-hmm, that's true. We pretty much had a non-event every morning. It was just get on your bike and go. It's either cold or it's perfect, really.
Yes.
What's your advice for folks who are trying to get ready to do something like this?
I would say it involves, the biggest part is the consecutive long days.
Mm.
It's not about if you can do 100 miles, but then you need a week off. It's
right.
If you can even just do 60 and then do 60 again the very next day, that's the most important skill for the parkway,
because
it's not about your speed, because we can plan to send you earlier or whatever needs to be done, but it's the ability to start off already sore and then get into your rhythm throughout the day. I think that that first summer before we did it in our preparation, though they're hard mornings, but they're so useful in terms of what you need to expect.
You know, that when the tour riders do it, because they, in general, their elevation gains day in and day out are not as hard as ours. They have their flat days, a lot of them, in fact. But I remember thinking to myself, this is another 80 and 80 day, 800 feet of vertical, 8,000 vertical and 80 miles.
Yes.
And, you know, that's not a grand tour number as far as the distance go, but for climb, it sure is. And, you know, you start off the trip with a couple of those. And of course, at the end of that, you feel beat up and mugged. And then we have that section in the middle where we have a couple of days in the 40s with a day off as well. So the body really recovers. So on those last 2 days, when we have a couple of harder climbs, descent ascent out of Asheville, descent into Asheville, I almost feel like I got my legs on. It's like, yes. I don't know, I've got my leg calluses or something by day six or something like that. You know, these scenes, like this picture right here, when we're getting ready to cross over into the aqueduct, I generally don't remember sections of the road.
Viaduct.
Yeah.
Everyone says aqueduct.
I do. I'm one of them.
It's the more common word.
But the palettes of the sky, right? That color palette in the sky, that's the kind of palette that I'll remember, like that green rich below and the blue above. And this is without a filter. This is just my GoPro being a GoPro. It's it's a great picture right here. So of the people you met on the side of the road, I think one of the more memorable guys I met was back there when I was stopping for the signs, was the guy who decided to pull over on the other side of the viaduct and start selling fresh Peruvian coffee without a permit on federal ground. And I remember talking to the guy, and I said, I have to pull a special use permit to do a cycling tour. I have to show $3 million worth of insurance. I have to show credibility that I do organize cycling tours, right? I had to show business licensing in order to get one of these permits. He didn't know anything. He just pulled over and started cooking, making coffee and selling it for $2 a cup. And people just were buying it. They didn't think anything about it. I remember him saying, "Hey, here's a bag of coffee. Don't tell anybody." Like, I'm going to go tell somebody that I got a permit. He didn't. I didn't care. But that kind of limits the ability for somebody to just show up and do one of these on their own. Do you remember any memories of some individuals you met either in the towns we were in or on the ride itself?
Not as much on the second trip, but definitely the first trip. There was a road closure and we were having to wait for the road to be open so we'd have a pilot vehicle in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we were stopping and talking to the construction guy who's just standing there holding the stop sign and then flips it to slow whenever you're ready. And Mr. Cornell.
That's right. His name was Cornell.
And he, when we asked what his name, he says, yes, like the university.
That's he cool. Was, you remember that.
Had a, just a joyful guy, just out there early in the morning. And I don't know why I remember him, but I remember him. Nothing
story.
More than that.
So of scenes at the end of the day, what do we got here?
That is the little Switzerland fireplace. That is my favorite end of day experience of the whole trip, in my opinion.
Yeah, me too. So the idea that right behind you is a restaurant and a bar and cornhole and a swimming pool and a hot tub and a massage therapy. And in front of you is just this gorgeous view. I remember looking down and thinking to myself, if I have to descend and go down there tomorrow morning, that means tomorrow afternoon I've got to climb out of there.
Yes.
I didn't want to do that. So fortunately, you don't leave here and go down. You leave here and you actually go up as we go to the next destination on the trail, which I believe is Asheville, right?
Yeah, head to Mount Mitchell.
Yeah. There's a picture here of Paul sitting at the end of the day doing exactly what we described. He's got the down jacket behind him, the beer in front of him, leg socks on to keep himself going. He'd figured out the routine pretty quickly to be successful on a trip like that.
That's my hair going crazy in the wind.
I know, right? That the wind on some of these passes where we spend the night, that makes it all worth it. Pictures of the bikes. You know, a lot of times people take pictures of themselves or pictures of the scenery. But when I look at these pictures of the bikes here and I think to myself, you know, I don't know how long you and I will own these bikes because we've already got, oh my goodness, I probably got 20,000 miles on mine, maybe more. And my frame's cracked and I've wrecked it really bad twice. Once during a race, I ran into somebody and that cracked the frame. And then, of course, my fly off the bridge incident. And your bike, you know, Kelly had it before you had it before then. But that picture there of the bikes in of itself kind of defines the whole trip, right? Your job is not to do the Blue Ridge Parkway. It's to take your bike from one end to the other using just your legs.
Yeah. Those are relatively common for anybody at their stop. If there's a cool view, it's they take themselves the picture of their bike leaning up against the sign, leaning up against the view, and then it's the picture of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we did a detour to the top of Mount Mitchell. What do you remember about that? Were you driving Sag?
I was driving that day.
Yeah. So I remember going up that. And I remember thinking every other time I've done this, it's been part of a 102-mile ride that starts in Spartanburg, South Carolina. When we did it this time, we'd only gone 25 miles. And I remember making the right turn thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die. Because every other time I've got to this point, I'd already gone 90 plus miles. I'd already climbed 10,000 feet by the time I got to this point. And I remember how easy this was compared to the past. Now, it wasn't easy, but it was so much easier when compared to the past. I thought that was wonderful. I got to the top of this one that day and I felt like the king. Then, of course, I descend and make a right turn. And as soon as you descend out of Mount Mitchell and make a right turn, your mind is telling you that Asheville is next and it's a big descent. What my mind didn't tell me is there's a category one called Craggy Gardens that's going to take me up to 6,000 feet. And then I'm going to descend really hard. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we descend really hard and you think you're about to get to Asheville. And then we take this little detour. We turn to the right and we go through this quasi-subdivisional area. And I don't know if you remember that, but we were going down really fast and there was wild turkeys on the road.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, Lenny's having to swerve around turkeys as we're descending. And I thought to myself, you saw a bear crossing the road.
Yes,
right?
Yes. On the first trip, there was we were talking about earlier that day even saying that we seen lots of deer and the like on previous days and that we hadn't seen a bear. And then just a few hours later, we saw a bear in the road and then followed by three cubs going after it. And that was right.
I wasn't with you for that. I only got you after you had seen it. You just said, hey, Dad, there's...
It was right at the top of a climb. So I was tired and couldn't go very far. So I was hoping, I hope these things just cross and get out of here. Not much I can do about it. Not much I needed to do about it.
Right.
Like,
so when did we get to, we descend out of Asheville. We descend into Asheville. We spend the night in Asheville. And then we have the last day. And I always intentionally ignore questions about what's the last day like? I said, it's okay. You've got this. Well, the truth is there's two HCs the last day. So that's like saying, On the last day, we're going to do Alpe d'Huez and Mont Ventoux on the same day. Or we're going to say, I'm going to do the Tourmalet in the morning and then Alpe d'Huez in the afternoon because it's back-to-back HC climbs. Remember this?
Yeah.
What do you remember about that day? Because you were riding that day.
That was another day we started pretty early. And just because of the nature of that region, we're spending so much time at higher elevation. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of time when you're in the clouds. So you're getting that constant wetness. It's a little colder because you're at the higher elevations. Mm-hmm. And I remember my nose was so cold, I would wear a face mask whenever I was going down.
I know, everybody thought, Alex, are you scared of COVID at elevation? Yeah. He had on that 20-cent disposable mask.
I was wearing a disposable mask. It was just chilly up there. Mm-hmm. And it looked like it would be, I've seen it when it's not that cloudy and the views are fantastic, but there wasn't that much you could see that day just because you were in a cloud, or even worse, you were in a cloud in a tunnel.
Well, here's a little video of you at the end there.
Right here, I'm 0.2 miles away from the sign that says we're 19 to go. So you do the math, that means we've got exactly 18.8 until we're done.
Yep, you got the mask on right there, and you could tell that the end game is more important than anything else at this point.
Yeah.
So we get to the bottom, right? We're done with the entire trip. We hit the bottom, and we do this last little video here. Let's pause to let that happen.
Just awesome. You got to do it.
It's a lot, but it's worth it.
Epic, epic ride.
You want to be in the best cycling ship of your life? Do this.
Awesome.
That's right.
Would you have added anything to that summary? Because I basically gave everybody one sentence to summarize 450 plus miles of riding and almost 50,000 feet of vertical.
I feel like whenever I first talk about the trip, I always bring it to this is hard, but it's fun. And I really don't emphasize more on the it's fun, but it's hard. I kind of focus on the negative at first, but truly, it's a really great experience. Doing way more than you think you can do over and over again really is like build something in you that you always take with you as an athlete, as a person going forward. And that's one of the parts of this trip that I really appreciate.
Yeah, I would say that as well. So we're going to do it every year as long as you want to do it and as long as our bodies are going. We have these information sessions, guys. I hope you can join them. We're going to cover a little bit more of the anecdotals when we do the day in and day outs of our information sessions. But the stories are why we do things. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this chapter of Threshold Stories, Crossing Thresholds, One Story at a Time. Get ready to cross more thresholds with me in 2 weeks. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or on my Facebook page at Jeff Gora Team USA.